This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 685 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Israel has killed at least 400 Palestinians and injured nearly 2,700 between August 13th and August 20th, according to official records from the Ministry of Health in Gaza. The Israeli army has been obliterating entire city blocks in Gaza City and other areas in northern Gaza as Palestinian children, men, and women starve to death, and as Israeli forces and American mercenaries continue to trap and kill starving Palestinians seeking meager amounts of food. According to the health ministry, 22 people were killed and 49 were injured at so-called aid distribution sites on Wednesday alone, bringing the total recorded number to 2,018 killed and 14,950 injured since May 27th, when the U.S.-led Gaza Humanitarian Foundation began its lethal operations. As part of its intention to fully invade, occupy, and destroy Gaza City, the Israeli army has intensified its attacks on Al Zaytun neighborhood, with continuous airstrikes, artillery shelling, and gunfire. These attacks have resulted in the mass slaughter of Palestinian families and massive destruction of buildings and public facilities, the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights stated on Wednesday. The commission added that, quote, hundreds of families have been forced to flee, including many children, people with disabilities, and older people with nowhere safe to go amid dire humanitarian conditions, while others reportedly remain trapped, completely cut off from food, water, and medicine supplies. Over 2 weeks, the UN recorded at least 54 attacks on residential buildings and entire blocks in Gaza City, killing entire families in airstrikes and shelling. Attacks were also recorded on shelters of forcibly displaced people, including tents and schools. These figures, the UN says, quote, represent only a portion of the true toll due to underreporting in such dire circumstances. They indicate that the systematic destruction of Gaza City is already underway. Euromed Human Rights Monitor has reported that Israeli occupation forces have been using remote-controlled vehicles packed with explosives to destroy buildings in Al Zaytun in order to force Palestinians out of their homes and shelters. The army has flattened approximately 400 homes with explosive-laden robots and aerial bombardment, Euromed stated. Quote, this wide-scale military operation mirrors similar assaults in Rafah, Khan Yunis, and northern Gaza, aimed at obliterating entire communities and forcibly displacing all who remain. Launched on August 11th, the operation represents Israel's ongoing push to assume total and unlawful control over Gaza City. The intent is to evacuate long-standing residents and up to 1 million displaced individuals, most having fled northern Gaza, and confined them to isolated, small areas in the south. Drones, specifically quadcopters, are being deployed to encircle residential blocks and coerce civilians into fleeing under armed threat, the human rights group adds. Maha Husseini, a researcher with Euromed, stated on August 17th that, quote, Israel managed to exterminate most of Gaza's journalists. Today, it is carrying out an obliteration campaign against Gaza's largest neighborhood, Zaytun, under almost no media coverage. The Palestinian Civil Defense warned this week that their rescue workers are unable to reach or treat the dead and wounded in Al Zaytun, and the residents of Gaza City have nowhere else to go. Approximately 50,000 Palestinians are in Al Zaytun, and rescuers can't protect its residents as Israeli forces annihilate the city. Quote, we are living under extremely harsh conditions in Gaza City with no means of survival. The people of Gaza have no option left but death, the spokesperson for the civil defense stated. That was in Al Zaytun, Gaza City, this week. Other areas in Gaza City and northern Gaza have been destroyed in escalating Israeli attacks. In the Tufah neighborhood on August 17th, reporter Mahmoud Al-Awaidia documented the widespread devastation left behind by the Israeli army. Quote, "There is massive destruction as far as the eye can see," he says, as the camera pans around an entire landscape of rubble, including the remains, he says, of the Al-Mahatta Mosque. As Israel's mass destruction of Gaza City accelerates, so does its policies of forced displacement and expulsion. Satellite images released this week show the emptying of tent shelters, at least 132 buildings destroyed, and 58 Israeli military vehicles, including 17 bulldozers, moving into the city, Sky News reported. Al Jazeera English's Hani Mahmoud said on Wednesday that, quote, "More people are now receiving phone calls from the Israeli military warning them not to be in areas where they've lived all their lives and threatening them that they're going to be in the line of fire if they stay in these areas, asking them to leave as soon as possible, giving them just a little window of time. People are leaving behind their belongings," he said, "including whatever food supplies they managed to obtain in the past few weeks." Tarek Abu Azoum, also with Al Jazeera, said on August 19th that, quote, "There has been a huge focus by the Israeli army on targeting the eastern portions of Gaza City, destroying the civilian infrastructure and dismantling the civilian fabric there. Some families have moved to other parts of Gaza and started to set up tents close to the coast. There are also huge portions of Gaza City residents determined to live close to their communities and homes, even as attacks continue to unfold in other parts of the Gaza Strip." Our contributor, Asim Al-Nabi, who is also the spokesperson for the Gaza municipality in Gaza City, posted to social media that, quote, "The idea of losing Gaza forever has driven people here to madness. They would rather die than be torn from it. They would rather be killed literally on Gaza's land than see our city turned into nothing more than a memory. We are the ones who know this city best. We are its people, its children, its lovers, its rightful keepers. We have carried its stones in our hands, breathed its sea breeze, felt both its tenderness and its harshness. We have lived its beauty, its longing, its wounds. No one belongs to Gaza more than we do. So leave us, just leave it to us. Let us be the ones to grieve it. Let us be the ones to weep for its martyrs. But leave us here, just leave us here." That was from Asim Al-Nabi, writing from Gaza City. Meanwhile, Western and regional states continue to send lethal airdropped parcels of food aid instead of forcing Israel to open the crossings to the thousands of aid trucks that remain blocked or, at best, trickled in. On August 17th, an airdropped aid package killed an elderly Palestinian man in southern Gaza. Sabr al-Zamili, 75 years old, was inside a tent when the package fell directly on him, according to his family. He was preparing to head to the mosque for his daily prayers, his son told the publication Middle East Eye, and his daughter Sarah said his body was retrieved from beneath the package with severe injuries. Quote, "His entire body was broken," she said. The United Nations reported this week that only 47% of the 2,000 metric tons of food supplies required daily to meet basic humanitarian food assistance needs has been allowed to enter Gaza. Starvation in Gaza is at the worst level since October 2023, and what has entered is insufficient to meet even the minimum caloric intake needs, the UN stated. Included in the limited quantities of food are mainly dry goods. However, the risk of spoilage and infestation of food supplies has drastically increased due to being stranded for months, heat, and impending expiration dates. Furthermore, the UN notes, cooking gas has not entered Gaza for over 5 months, and firewood has become increasingly unaffordable, forcing many to use waste and scrap wood as alternative cooking sources, exacerbating health and environmental risks. Since the beginning of August, the Children's Fund UNICEF says it was able to deliver limited amounts of therapeutic food for acutely malnourished children. as well as infant formula for just 1,200 babies. But children and adults alike are continuing to die of starvation. Since March, nearly 100,000 children under the age of 5 have been screened by UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees. This week, UNRWA reported that in less than 6 months, child malnutrition has tripled across the Gaza Strip, and in Gaza City, nearly 1 in every 3 children is now malnourished, 6 times higher than before Israel broke the so-called ceasefire in mid-March. The Gaza government media office stated on August 17th that the ongoing prevention of allowing meat, fish, dairy products, fresh produce, and other basic foods is part of its policy of deliberate starvation. Quote, even if a few trucks enter in very limited quantities, the occupation deliberately leaves these trucks vulnerable to looting by its affiliates, prevents their safe arrival to those entitled to them, and even kills anyone who attempts to secure these trucks, the media office said. On Wednesday, August 20th, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza recorded 3 new deaths from starvation and malnutrition, bringing the total number to 269 recorded deaths by starvation, including 112 children. Speaking to the Electronic Intifada podcast this week, Dr. Tha'er Ahmed explained that forced and sustained starvation is shaving years off of Palestinians' lives, especially children whose cognitive and growth development is dependent on good nutrition in their earliest stages. Quote, every day that passes that they are under these conditions of malnourishment, especially the severe ones, you are gambling with their future. They have cognitive issues that will develop as a result of this that will be irreversible, Ahmed noted. Children's immune systems will be irrevocably weaker, he says, adding that children will have shorter statures and developmental delays, not reaching the classic milestones that we see kids reach, even crawling and then walking, or then speaking. All of these things get delayed, he says. They get pushed back because of what's being inflicted on them. For more, watch or listen to What Does Israel's Starvation of Gaza Do to the Human Body on electronicintifada.net. Israeli and American mercenary forces operating the private so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation sites continue to trap, injure, and kill starving Palestinians, including children, every day. Defense for Children International Palestine released a report this week documenting 2 separate incidents in July, where Palestinian children were shot and injured by the Israeli military while trying to obtain food from aid distribution areas as part of Israel's ongoing genocidal campaign against Palestinians. 15-year-old Mohammed Al-Hueti told the children's rights group, quote, while I was in the waiting area by Wadi Gaza Bridge, we were monitored by an Israeli quadcopter. We waited there for 30 minutes for the aid delivery gate to open. As soon as the gate opened, we rushed towards the gate when 5 Israeli tanks appeared and opened fire directly at us, resulting in numerous martyrs and injuries. I am an orphan, having lost both my parents. I have to go to the American aid point in Netzarim to obtain food for my 8 siblings and myself, Mohammed said. DCIP says that Israeli forces targeted a group of starving Palestinians on July 27, 2025, while they made their way to the U.S.-registered Gaza Humanitarian Foundation aid station at the Netzarim corridor in central Gaza to collect food and supplies. This tragic incident led to the loss of 18 lives, including 2 children, and left 10 others injured, also including 2 children, among them Mohammed. He says, quote, I was struck in the head by an expanding bullet. For an hour, I remained under fire from the Israeli army, bleeding profusely. The aid gate finally opened at 11:30 a.m. After that, I crawled and stumbled, barely conscious, until I reached the Nuseirat intersection, Mohammed added. The Center for Constitutional Rights in New York, meanwhile, filed a lawsuit seeking records from the Trump administration over its funding of the private U.S.-registered Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. The lawsuit comes on the heels of the legal group's official notification in June to the GHF, warning of its potential legal liability for complicity in Israel's war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide against Palestinians. The lawsuit also follows the Trump administration's failure to comply with a Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, request submitted last month. The lawsuit, filed on August 20th, seeks records that could shed light on not only the decision-making process behind the $30 million grant it received from the USAID, which was approved by the U.S. State Department, but also on the creation of GHF, its funding, and how it plans to use the grant. The Center for Constitutional Rights says it is particularly interested in information that could reveal whether the administration's distribution of funds has any links to President Trump's Gaza Riviera plan, which would cleanse the area of Palestinians and redevelop it for investors. Quote, GHF's militarized aid distribution model, which it designed in close coordination with the Israeli occupying power, is more suited to furthering the genocide than to providing much-needed humanitarian relief to a starved Palestinian population, said Ayla Kadah, attorney and justice fellow at the Center for Constitutional Rights. Rather than take action to prevent GHF's ongoing contribution to war crimes, the U.S. government has provided it with a $30 million grant, bypassing even its baseline vetting processes. This shocks the conscience, and Americans deserve to know how their taxpayer dollars are being used to further this dangerous dimension of Israel's genocidal project. Israel attacked a hospital again this week as laboratories and clinics face a steady decrease in basic supplies. On Friday, August 15th, the Israeli army bombed Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir al-Balah, killing two Palestinians. The Gaza government media office said that the attack targeted a tent for displaced people within the walls of the hospital's courtyard near the outpatient clinic. It was the 13th time since the beginning of the genocide that the hospital was bombed. At Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis, sewage overflowed into clinics on August 14th, forcing the hospital to temporarily stop its services. Dr. Atef Al-Hout, the hospital's director, stated that the flooding could not be fixed without coordination with Israel, as the source of the sewage leak is located in a no-go zone designated by the Israeli military and closed to Palestinians. Because of the 22 months of widespread destruction of infrastructure to sewage lines and pumps, doctors say that waterborne diseases are skyrocketing. Dr. Munir Al-Bursh, the Director General of the Health Ministry in Gaza, said that around 170 patients every day are brought into Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital with the parasitic infection Giardia as a result of people resorting to drinking contaminated water, especially as the summer temperatures rise. Al-Bursh also said this week that hospital beds are at 300% occupancy, quote, an unprecedented figure that reflects the scale of the health and humanitarian catastrophe we are experiencing today. Compounding the health crisis, the health ministry reported this week that 49% of laboratory testing materials are completely out of stock. 51% of laboratory consumables and supplies are out of stock. Many basic tests in operating rooms and intensive care units have run out or are about to run out. Most of the materials needed to check blood levels for patients who have undergone kidney and liver transplants have run out. Complete blood count or CBC testing materials, which are the basic test for visitors to healthcare facilities, are about to run out, and what is available is sufficient for only a limited number of days. Materials for testing blood units for viral infections are sufficient for only a few more days as well, posing a risk of unsafe blood transfusions. Blood bags and blood transfusion kits are only sufficient for less than a month from now, and approximately 45% of laboratory equipment has been damaged or destroyed and requires maintenance and spare parts. A journalist was killed this week, Islam El-Komi, who worked as a reporter and content creator for different media platforms, was killed along with his son when Israel bombed their tent in Gaza City on August 19th. The Gaza government media office said that with El-Komi's killing, the number of journalists and media workers murdered since October 2023 has risen to 239. following the hunting and targeted assassinations by the Israeli military of six reporters on August 10th, including Anas al-Sharif and Mohammed Kureika. Gaza journalist Saleh al-Jafarawi is now being threatened by Israel. On August 14th, al-Jafarawi said that the spokesperson for the Israeli army, Avichai Adrai, along with other military and Hebrew media figures, has put a target on his back. Quote, "You either live as you want or you live as they want," he says. "You live with your head held up high, broadcasting both audio and video. We will not kneel to them, God willing. I won't hide from you. Saleh might be the next martyr, or it could be one of my colleagues who will be the next martyr. We could all be subjected to what Anas and our colleagues were subjected to," he said. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight "I Envy My Dead Best Friend" by journalist and English graduate Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza City. Khaled writes about his best friend, Mohammed Hammo, who was killed by Israel in November 2023. Hammo was a contributor to the Electronic Intifada. Quote, "My tears for Mohammed have decreased recently. I stopped worrying for him, not because my grief has lessened or because I feel any relief at his absence or because my love for him has faded, but I stopped worrying simply because I know with certainty that Mohammed is in a better place. I even feel jealous of him, may he rest in peace, and I wish I was him. Mohammed was not displaced several times or forced to cook over a wood fire, surviving on scant amounts of water and sleeping without a blanket. He had not gone to the Netzarim or Rafah aid distribution points, where hundreds of starving people seeking food have been killed by the Israeli army. He did not wait hours for a bag of flour at an aid site only to get nothing. He did not go to bed hungry for days, feeling himself starved to death. He was not forced to drink salty or contaminated water. He was not left to wander with nowhere to shelter. I consider Mohammed to be the luckiest, as he did not spend the last 2 years of his life in fear as bombs shook the ground beneath him. He did not have to mourn and bury his loved ones one by one until none were left. Mohammed himself was never buried. His body still lies beneath the rubble, with no grave I can visit, even if the war were to end. But I visit him every day. He is always with me, alive in my mind. And as long as we, his friends, remember him, Mohammed will live on." Those are excerpts from "I Envy My Dead Best Friend" by Khaled Al-Kershali, writing from Gaza on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Palestine. 2 days before his brother Mohammed was killed with Anas al-Sharif in Gaza City, photographer Ibrahim Nofal filmed a group of music students practicing their instruments in a tent shelter. He says, quote, "In a place drowning in grief, Gaza's children have chosen music as a form of therapy and a symbol of resilience. Between the tents and in the middle of war, it's crazy, right? We're dying. We sacrifice martyrs, dying of hunger. Life is almost non-existent, but there are people with hope in art, in something very beautiful that happens in the tents. This is the music school among the tents. Students learn the oud, the flute, the tabla, and the guitar. This is real resilience," he says.
إشي جنوني صح إحنا بنموت نقدم شهداء ميتين من الجوع الحياة معدومة تقريبا ولكن في ناس لسه في عندها أمل في فن في إشي كثير جميل بيصير بين الخيام.
And a group of kids were filmed playing with a parachute that was dropped with food parcels over Gaza. Ahmed Al-Kilani, a photographer who captured the scene, said, quote, "Gaza kids turn a parachute into joy, simple happiness despite the pain." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.